And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It is Wednesday, March 13th. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris. Thank you again to Mike Gianella from Baseball Prospectus for filling in on Tuesday while Eno's house just just created a mountain of tech problems all at once upon returning from spring training.
Never have I ever wanted to do that Abe Simpson meme where he comes in, sees Bart is, you know, at his local bar, is like the doorman at his local bar, and like turns around, puts his hat back on, and goes back out. Like, I was like, can we just go back to spring training? I spent the weekend with the kids at the games, having fun, perfect weather. After it was all rainy and cold, you saw me on the pod freezing. The weekend was beautiful. And we had a great time. We come back. The fire alarm. We have an external hardwired fire alarm that's attached to the sprinkler system. We have a sprinkler system in our house. And the external fire alarm, which is like a bell like you see in like, you know, old school schools and firehouses and stuff, like a bell, you know, like a ring, has been going off for 36 hours. All of my neighbors hate my guts. The firemen have just come and left. There's also a water leak that was kind of related to it, that they had to shut the water off. So we come home, first night in the house, we've got no power, no water, and no internet, which really upset the kids. And we had a full Tuesday now of, having to have people out to look at the house, but everything's online. I can't say that the fire alarm is online. That thing has been disabled, and we're shoving that problem into the future. You know, we'll deal with that sometime, hopefully before the house burns down.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the goal, right? You gotta get that fixed before your kids start doing things in the kitchen that have any sort of heating elements involved. I think that's sort of your timetable for that. But we're glad you're back. Glad everything is slowly getting back up and running in your house. That sounds like chaos to come home to for sure. And I think that Abe Simpson meme is a perfect call. Discord is open. And as I mentioned yesterday, the Listener League has dropped. We're actually onto Listener League 2. So make sure you choose that link. We've reposted that a couple of times. It's pinned at the top of the Listener League channel. If that one fills, we'll make Listener League 3. We're all playing against each other. It's a salary cap format. Big news here is that it locks on Tuesday, the 19th of March for the season. There's no in-season moves, no in-season lineup changes or pickups. So just read all the rules, go through it. It's a $280 budget. Salaries are locked in. So if guys get hurt, obviously you're not going to want to necessarily use those players if it's serious injuries, because it's easier to just keep it locked in.
It's like a mix of daily fantasy where you've got these prices attached to players, and season long and draft and hold. So there's, you know, minimal pull in terms of, you know, having to massage your roster all the season.
Right.
I like this. Which is good. It's almost like a home run derby, but like, you know, a whole team.
Like a roto version. Categories slightly modified as well. So read all the rules. Be sure to dig into it. But you can check it out in our Discord. The link for the Discord is in the show description.
And who set that up for us?
Shout out to Jeff in the Discord. Jeff Good. Yeah. Low Guppy in the Discord. Say thank you to Jeff, if you're in there. Because this is a really fun way for a much larger group of us to play together. And I think unbeknownst to Eno, unless he happened to, in the chaos of yesterday, listen to the pod I did with Mike, he doesn't know there's a prize. The prize involves him. The top 10 overall finishers in the Listener League this year will get invites to play in a traditional league with us next year. So
nice.
We had to come up with a prize. That seemed like the best prize I could come up with that didn't require, you know, American dollars.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. We can do that.
Hope people are excited about that. And maybe that league, by that time, here's my goal. I will try to find a sponsor for that league. There's no guarantee a sponsor that can do something else for a prize for 2025.
We're also behind the scenes working on some merch. So maybe at some point, you know, one of the prizes can be merch too.
Yeah, we're cooking up a lot of things right now. Literal sandwiches. I mean, that's Chef Ryan doing the heavy lifting on that.
Sandwich for the live shows in New York next week. The sandwich, I think, sounds delicious.
I think it's going to have like 22 ingredients by the time the final recipe is determined, because every time we have an exchange about it, one of us chips in something. Yeah. Ryan, what about some fried shallots? Yes, fried shallots sound great. More is better, always. We're 1 week away from the first of our two live shows at Other Half Brewing, Domino Park location. 7 o'clock is the start time for each of those recordings. We'll be there a couple hours before that. We'll probably be there for a couple hours after that, I would imagine. So we hope to see many of you out there for at least one of those shows, if you can make it. Next week, Wednesday and Thursday, the 20th and 21st. Let's get to the contents of the show. You wrote a piece looking at what happens in the walk years of position players. And we've talked about some of these things before, but there was one thing that really jumped off the page to me, right? You had these bullet points right at the top. If there's an effect on performance, it's a positive one. That makes sense. Players do a little extra, prepare differently.
Often become free agents in their peak years.
Yeah, there's a series of things that make that very logical. They tend to stay on the field longer, right? So maybe that's pushing through the minor bumps and bruises. You know, maybe it's doing a little more preventative maintenance. Any combination of things like that. That's always made sense to me. They chase a little more on pitches outside the zone, right? You're pressing. You're trying to earn the biggest contract of your entire life. So you're going to be a little more aggressive trying to make things happen. That makes sense to me too. But this one, when I saw it, was very surprising. They tend to steal less often. That's a little bit counterintuitive to me, because my brain would say, you're trying to do as many things as you can to show future teams what you're able to do. And you didn't find that. That's not really the way things go. They tend to steal less often. I would assume the exact opposite was true.
It was, you know, like 250, 300 players, because there are a lot of free agents every year. I think that the thing is that if like a better study might have found some like a slightly different effect, which is just that I didn't do projected stolen bases. So, you know, really the reason why some studies say players do better in their contract years and some studies say they do it worse is kind of, it has to do with the nuts and bolts of how you do it. Do you age adjust? Do you only count people who are in contract years their first time? Or do you also count the ones who were in it when they're 38, you know? And like, do you look at them versus their own projections? And I think the best ones, you sort of limit the scope, look at them versus their projections, and find a positive effect. Not a huge one, but a small one. And so I think a better study, since I just looked at raw stolen bases and found they were down a little bit, would be to look at their projected stolen bases and see if maybe they were up a little bit versus their projections. Because if you are a free agent at 28, 29, 30, the stolen base aging curve, especially if you ever stole 20 bases before, we've got one from Jeff Zimmerman and Mike Podhortzer of Fangraphs. It's a little bit old, but it shows that at 25 you peak, and then you can start losing as much as 2 to 4 to 6 stolen bases from between there and 30 per season. So it's a pretty steep aging curve for those that steal bags, you know, at a big rate. And you can see it really obviously if you look at like Mike Trout. It's like he's stealing bases, he's stealing, now he's not. And I think the now he's not moment is often at 28, 29, 30. You're a good enough player where you're like a slugger, you're a three hitter, whatever it is. We don't want you to get hurt. You're slowing down. You know, there's ways to get hurt. Your break even, getting close, too close to the break even point, whatever it is. So it's possible that people steal a little bit more versus their projections, considering that I found that they were down like 1.5 stolen bases. That's a little bit less even than the average aging curve. So it could actually be considered a plus 0.5. Either way, it's not a big effect. I think what we are seeing a little bit recently is a 2023 effect that's screwing with our heads, because we just changed the stolen base rule so radically that stolen bases went up 40% year over year. Biggest increase ever in the history of baseball. And so, you know, we kind of tend to think of some people that had, I think, some big stolen base years in that 2023 environment.
Right. And I think teams will generally value speed a bit more now because they're going to utilize it more often. So that could lead players to be more aggressive. And yeah, how you look at it, I think, is a kind of an important thing. I think looking relative to projection makes a lot of sense to me. You know, you just want to see projected for 10, got 15, projected for 5, got 3. Like, that to me is a better indicator. And I think you do probably want to focus on first time free agents because of the aging curve. Because once you get to your mid 30s, when you're hitting free agency for the second or third time, what kind of speed do you have left at that point, right? It's a skill you're just not likely to use.
And how much carrot is there, and how much, you know, juice is there? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're like 38, it's like, yeah, I want that next contract, but, you know, and I'm trying to stay on the field, but geez, my bones won't let me. So, I mean, I'm sure Joey Votto wanted to play as much as possible last year, you know, it just didn't shake out that way. So, but yeah, the first time you go through, you know, we've got someone who didn't make my study at all because of just the way, the type of player he is Gleyber Torres. And, you know, I'm kind of fascinated with him because projections say he's a good play at price in almost every league anyway. And, you know, he actually was a little bit more passive. He just didn't show up with like the rules of my query. But he was a little bit more passive recently than he was earlier in his career. And he had, you know, a little bit more raw power earlier in his career, you know, in certain ways, at least demonstrated power. Remember that 38 homer? That was 2019. But you even have some ISOs that last year's 180 ISO was below his career ISO in terms of isolated slugging for Gleyber Torres. So you could like see a slightly more aggressive Gleyber get out there and maybe get to 30 homers. If there is a stolen base effect, he's projected for, you know, 11, but the bat X and the bat say 16 and 14. So what if you give him, you know, 29, 30 homers and 16, 18 stolen bases with that 270 average, he's going to be even better than the projections say. And he's already at a good price for projections. You know what I mean? So like, he's kind of one of my favorites for this. I should have just found a way to, you know, honorable mention. Sometimes you get like, you do a query and you're like, well, these are the most, you know, this is my top 10. I got to pick some players off the top 10. That's kind of how I write a lot of pieces. In this case, Gleyber didn't show up in either of my ways. I looked at people who could be more aggressive and benefit from it, and I looked at people who haven't been on the field a lot and could benefit from being on the field more. And Gleyber was just kind of not a top 10 guy in either of those ways. But, you know, he's had some seasons where he's 500, 570 plate appearances. Give him 650 plate appearances this year. Give him a shot at 30 homers. Give him a shot at 20 stolen bases. There's like a peak season platform year in him. And the carrot's pretty strong because, you know, he's going to be a full free agent for the first time. At 27 years old is a good time to be a free agent. And he's going to be coming off a very, he's going to be on a team that's going to have a lot of attention, you know? And so maybe the Yankees will feel a lot of pressure to re-sign him. And then he can also foment some interest in the open market. So I think Gleyber Torres is a really good pick this year, but we've talked about him a fair amount.
He is well liked on this show for 2024 fantasy baseball purposes, just because there's a ton of core skills that look really solid. And there's the reasons you outlined where it could be even a little better for this year. The interesting thing for him, too, being a free agent after the season, is that he's a second baseman. Like, there aren't that many younger second basemen who are clearly everyday second basemen that you would want to commit a massive long-term contract to. But he might be an outlier in that regard, because I think his skills, to me, are the kinds of skills at the plate that age really well. So if you're not really worried about him being terrible defensively in year five, year six of a longer term deal, I think you could be looking at something like that for his contract that runs a lot longer than you'd expect. And the age is a factor, but also it's the type of player he is. But he's very unique in that way.
Yeah, you know, second base is kind of where you just put people, you know, even organizationally, it's where you put former shortstops and things like that. So, you know, I'm just looking over at I always want to call it Sport Rack, but it's Spot Rack.
Spot Track.
Spot Track?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm moving on from mispronouncing player names to mispronouncing site names. It's going to be really exciting. but you've got Gleyber Torres, Brandon Drury, who will be 33. Whit Merrifield, who has a club option. Ha-Seong Kim will be a free agent, but I think he'll be coming off as a shortstop. Jorge Polanco has a club option. I think he's going back. Adam Frazier will be 33 and not at all in the same class. So, and then Brandon Lau has a club option. I don't think he'll be on the free agent market. So basically it's Gleyber Torres or Brandon Drury and David Bote.
Yeah, right. Inspiring group.
Yeah, so he will be all alone at the top of a list for anybody who wants to improve their second base situation.
You're right. And I think he could be a good middle of the order run producer for a really long time. So I don't know. I think there's a very good chance he can add to what he's going to get as a free agent with what he does this year. Let's get to a couple other players that were featured here. I'm going to frame the question this way. Of the five players you featured in the story, who have you drafted the most on your teams so far?
Now I gotta look and see who I.
I know you got into a very odd situation with Yoan Moncada where you were just like waiting and waiting at third base, but I don't think you have him in multiple places.
I don't have
places.
Him circled. Yeah, I think it's Tyler O'Neill. I traded for Tyler O'Neill in a dynasty league. I have him in a couple places as like my third and fourth outfielder. And, you know, for Tyler O'Neill, I think one thing that I would like for him is a fresh voice when it comes to hitting coaching. When I last talked to him, he was talking about letting the ball travel. That is not the St. Louis way, for sure. But he does have such prodigious raw power that maybe that is the best way to avoid striking out 35% of the time and make the best use of his skills. In any case, just a different home offensive environment could help him. He's going from one of the biggest, most pitcher-friendly parks in baseball to one of the smallest, most hitter-friendly parks in baseball with a big old green monster over there that's going to inflate his BABIP. Last time he had a BABIP over 300, he hit 286, 34 homers and 15 stolen bases. So there's like a park factor component. And then he's just had a really hard time staying on the field. And I think when you get traded, it's like this double whammy where you get traded. So, you know, oh, like maybe the teams don't value me the same way I did. Like one team just said goodbye to me. Right. So it's a little bit of a wake up call. And then you have your contract year coming. So I feel like he spent all offseason training with the idea of I'm going to stay on the field this year. Like Juan Soto was really upfront about this. Juan Soto was like, I want to play every day. I want to play maximum possible. And why does he want to do that? Because he wants the maximum possible deal when he's coming out soon. And I think Tyler O'Neill is right at the crux of like a lot of things changing in the positive for him. Now, we did talk on the Boston preview about some of the problems maybe with projecting the Boston outfield. And that if Sedano Rafaela makes the team, and he looks increasingly likely to make the team. He's playing center field almost every time you see the A lineup out there. And Duren is playing left field. I've seen left and right, I think. So, you know, if you've got Rafael and Duren in there, like, I guess Willy Abreu could go back to the minors, or they just, you know, they have four competent outfielders and Yoshida at DH. So really five competent outfielders for four positions. There is some risk. But Tyler O'Neill's a right-hander. And I just don't think he's going to go to the small side of a platoon. You know what I mean? Like, if he was a left-hander, I'd actually be more worried about his playing time. We had an exchange about the Detroit Tigers in one of our group chats where the Detroit Tigers have basically said out loud that they're going to be San Francisco, you know, in Detroit. And that everybody, that there are 13 major league hitters on this team and they're all going to hit and they're all going to get time. And the way we read that was one of Colt Keith and Parker Meadows is going to sit against lefties every time. That's given the situation. So that's a lefty situation. Tyler Neal's a righty, and he's too good to. And they acquired him. They wanted him. You know. So I think he's too good to be like, oh, we just want you to hit against lefties. that's not why Tyler Neal is there. So I think his playing time is fairly safe. I think it's Abreu who's maybe getting sent down because he's got options and. You know, they've got other things they can do. They can put Rob Refsnyder out there just to back guys up, you know?
Yeah, to be that small side platoon player. I guess the question will come down to how much Tyler O'Neill gets back to what he did in 2021 against same-handed pitching. He had a 137 WRC plus that year. Did it with almost a 32% K rate in that split. The last two seasons, he's been closer to like 10%. Below league average. 91 and 87 are the last two seasons for him against righties. So maybe it's sort of a prove-it opportunity. They open the year with him playing every day. If he's not doing enough against righties, then someone like Abreu starts to take a little bit of that playing time away, at least against tough righties. There's a way to make the pieces fit. I think more hinges on O'Neill's health than on his skills at this point. If he's healthy, I think you're right. He's generally going to play a lot.
A little bit of a spring training update. It's not a lot of plate appearances, but this is really, really interesting to me. 58% pull percentage. I am not predicting that Tyler O'Neill will have a 58% pull percentage in the league, but I will say that I think he should pull the ball. And guess what? The Boston has in the minor leagues. It's kind of or in spring training.
Oh, they've got the replica.
Yeah, they got the baby green monster out there. So
you should theoretically have that, right? Shouldn't all of the spring training parks try to mimic the home? Some of them are shared, so you can't. You know, Camelback Ranch can't be.
But
U.S. Cellular Field and Dodger Stadium. But wouldn't you want the environment to visually and physically feel the same as much as it possibly can? I mean, the atmospheric conditions are obviously different. But right. I think as far as how the dimensions are, getting used to the walls and just the foul territory and all that stuff, that seems important.
I believe I remember correctly that Milwaukee, in Maryvale, the spring training, the actual field may not be exactly like Milwaukee. But they have training fields that are. So there's some teams that if you have a shared environment, you could probably have a nice field in the back that has the same dimensions. You know, that's pretty easy to do. But one thing that I know from coaching is that external cueing is superior to internal. So, you know, if you want someone to pull the ball to the left field, you don't say, you know, open up, step in the bucket or, you know, whatever. You don't say any of those things. You say, hit the ball over there. And what does the green monster represent but one big, huge external cue? Like, whap, whap, hit it here, hit it here.
Very good point. And yeah, I think it's really cool that the Spring Park in Florida for the Red Sox has the baby monster. Be sure to check out Eno's piece. TheAthletic.com/ratesandbarrels gets you a subscription if you don't have one already. It'll give you the best available offer that we have. Should be $2 a month on that for new subscribers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Let's move on to a couple other topics. You said you had this interesting sheet you put together where projections that are highlighted where they disagree the most by WRC+. And I'm very curious if there's a player type or any specific players that you find are the most interesting because of just how wide the range is on what the systems are spitting out.
Yeah, so what I did was I took the bat, Steamer, and Zips, and I took their projected WRC+, and then I did a standard deviation of those three. So basically, what's the spread in the group? And if you set a minimum of 400 plate appearances, let's do that. Number one is Wyatt Langford. You know, the bat has him at 94, Steamer has him at 121, and Zips has him at 118. So that's the biggest standard deviation. Next is Michael Bush. And you're going to sense a theme here. The bat has him at 88, Steamer 98, and Zips 112.
Ooh.
Next is Shohei Ohtani. And I think this is just maybe, this is a little bit of an outlier in the group, but I think this is just about spread because they've got 160 for the bat X with Shohei Ohtani because he just hits the ball so dang hard. 144 and 138 for the other two. Next one that we've got is Tristan Casas, another young player, but not quite a rookie. Junior Caminero and Nick Senzel represent a big split. And then you got James Outman and Kyle Manzardo as having big splits. So I think the general trend, because Joey Ortiz is on there next too, is that the young players, the bat is the most skeptical, just regresses them the hardest. And I think this is reflective of certain choices you can make in a projection system. Is how do you regress a player? Do you regress all rookies to some sort of all rookie baseline? Or do you group all rookies and say, hey, let's just look at people who have better Ks than BBs or better BBs than Ks and put them in their own group and regress that group? You know, how fine do you get? The nice thing about putting players into groups that are comps is that you can be more fine. What happens, though, is if you cut those comps up too much, you start having smaller samples you're comparing them to. Like, what if I take that all the way and say, I want to compare Wyatt Langford only to people that have good strikeout rates, great walk rates, high power, and run well, you know? Like, yeah, yes, that's a good way to compare player pool. Yeah, so I think that's why Steamer says, yeah, I did that, and I got 120 WRC+, because I basically compared him a bunch of top five prospects, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the bat may do that, but may have a heavier regression. We won't get all the way led into that level with the projection systems. They're still their babies of their creators, and they won't tell us all of that. But I think what's interesting is that we, as consumers of these products, these projections, can make decisions where, you know, do we run the auction calculator separately and throw Steamer in there and take a glance at it for rookies? Especially since we know when we're in a draft that the rookie is going to get drafted on his upside, you know? and that we have to spend, we have to have some idea what the right cost is. If you take the bat as your gospel, you will never draft one of these rookies.
Right. That's reflected in Derek Cardi's Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Clearly part of anti-Ellie, how he plays.
You know, don't draft rookies. I mean, that's part of the ethos there. And it makes sense. But if you want to take those calculated risks, I think what makes sense is, you know, aggregating, like ATC is a good projection system for taking these different projection systems and putting them together and weighting them differently. Or just running a separate one and taking a look at it for young players so that you have an idea of what's an okay cost to spend on Junior Caminero, you know? You know, what's a good price on Michael Bush? You know, not what's the lowest price. What is like a number I can actually spend on him?
So a few things to unpack there. Like, I think comparing a player like Caminero to a player like Bush, even though they both have very small amounts of big league experience, it's still like comparing an apple to a star fruit. Like because Michael Bush has been around for a while. Like, Michael Bush is 26 years old.
That's true.
Right? So there are totally different places on the aging curve, even though they have similarly limited big league experience. And then I think there's also something that's changing in the game is just how aggressively guys are getting promoted for their debuts. We don't have enough high quality, we don't have enough volume when it comes to players debuting young. So if you were to only compare Junior Caminero to guys that debuted before 21, you did the same thing you described earlier, where you're like, this isn't that many guys to compare them to. These were many of those players turned into elite players because it was so rare to debut before age 21 for so long.
I think we have uncovered some part of the secret sauce here. I got something that you just stepped on a landmine there. That was really interesting. So you're talking about age at level and age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Bush, the bat, 88 WRC plus. Steamer, 98. Zips, 112. Okay. Junior Caminero, the bat, 111. Steamer, 115. Zips, 95. So we just know from that comparison, I'm pretty sure, that the way they treat age is different.
That's so strange, though, not in the sense of like what they're doing, but thinking about how Derek has positioned himself pertaining to Ellie De La Cruz. But his projection for Ellie's not that bad. It's pretty much the same as everybody else's.
It's at the playing time. And then playing time is the last key to this, which we sort of glossed over. I mean, Caminero's due to start in the minor leagues.
Right. We just learned he got optioned to AAA. The bigger question is just how long does he stay there? Is it a few weeks?
Does Bush carve out like a part-time role? Like, there's still Patrick Wisdom. There's still, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's still other pieces on that team. And it's a pretty veteran team. I mean, you know, yes, the Rays could bring up Caminero to do a part-time thing too. But I think the Rays are kind of looking for a star a little bit more than the Cubs are with Bush. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and kind of at the crossroads of these ideas too is, like, I just saw Keith Law had his Rookies of Interest piece go up on The Athletic. It's not, like, the way he ordered them is not the way you would order them by ADP. It's very different because some of that is floor. Some of that's saying these are the guys that are actually going to have a role and keep it all year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a totally different sort of question or exercise than what we're trying to do, where it's how can I catch lightning in a bottle at a discounted price? Like, I want lightning in a bottle, but I don't want to pay top dollar for it.
Does he have like a functional, you know, fifth starter or like a good
Kyle Harrison's number one. Yeah.
Kyle Harrison's number one. All right, there you go.
Look at how the fantasy market treats Kyle Harrison.
Yeah.
Evan Carter was
probably a good streamer, you know? Well, Evan Carter is both things, though.
Yeah, but Michael Bush was third, and I thought, right, okay, because this is about opportunity.
He's probably going to get the job, and, you know, but he may not hit for a great average. He may hit for that 88 WRC plus that the bat has waiting for him, so...
Yeah, he becomes a part-time guy pretty quickly if that's what he's doing over a couple of months. I think with Bush, I'm pretty intrigued because he did something that a lot of hitters did at AAA. He got a lot better in terms of Ks and walks, but we had automated balls and strikes. So given his age, given those changes, how much stock can we put into the improved plate skills there? Because the projections don't really seem to be buying it. And I don't know if that's because he had a high K rate when he came up for the brief time he was with the Dodgers last year or why exactly that is, but the projections tell a story that make a little more sense in that particular area. But the disagreement in terms of just how good he's going to be also probably speaks to teams modeling things differently and having different views and opinions on age to level and whether or not someone like Bush actually has a bright big league future. Whereas the Dodgers look at him and say, eh, we've got depth and we need some roster flexibility. Like, he still had options left, so they didn't have to trade him. They just decided to trade him. Maybe it was more about the 40 man. But when you look at Michael Bush, you could say, I'm a glass half full sort of person. I think he just needs an opportunity. Or you could say, the flaws we saw in the minor leagues are too much for him to overcome.
You can actually still look at his spring stats and play that same game because you're like, whoa, 11% walk rate, 21% strikeout rate. Here we go. 2 homers, 2 stolen bases. You know, sleeper with a capital S.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at 15.6% swinging strike rate. That's the number that's in the biggest sample. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like a per pitch thing. And that's bigger than it ever was. That's bigger than it ever was. So, you know, I like Bush. It's fine. But I'd like to, if I like Bush, I want to run, you know, Steamer and Zips and look at a reasonable cost and not push him too high. The nice thing is I don't think he's necessarily going too high in drafts, but if you want Caminero and you can stash him and you can afford to wait, you know, it's also worth sort of shopping around. The one thing that this is a sort of regular Discord group chat kind of discussion is the idea of sort of shopping projections and sort of like hopping around from projection to projection. And we do it on the show. We talk about, oh, I'll buy the bat on this one, or I'll buy Zips on this one. One thing I like about it is that it kind of reins you in. No matter how excited you are, you have to pick one. You have to at least pick a projection that says what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
I'm going to take this projection here. At least it's a projection and not just like, I think Gleyber Torres is going to go 30-30 this year.
Right. Like, I love Michael Bush. Yeah. He's going to hit 30 home runs. Like, okay. Realistic good outcome is still the most optimistic of the projections.
Exactly.
At 22 homers. Like, that's a really good year if that's what Michael Bush does.
You can get in trouble, though, I think, because then you're kind of hopping around. You might be hopping around for different run environments.
Yep. That's definitely true. They're not all equalized that way.
You might just be only buying ceiling because you're buying like the highest projection for each player. You know, I like there was a joke about me during the team previews. I was like, everything was too cold. You know, I'm excited about this team. Everything's too cold. You know, I'm excited about this player. You know, I'm always taking the highest projection. So, you know, a very disciplined player might just have his projections and only by that's sort of the Larry Schechter approach is, you know, have your value, have your number, don't deviate from it, always buy the player at that number. And, you know, discipline can lead to generally positive outcomes. I'm not sure that it always leads to superlative outcomes. You know, I'm a little bit more, I'm looking at the projections, but sometimes I'm taking calculated risks. And, you know, I've got the labor record because I took a few calculated risks and they went in the right direction. And that went on top of my normal, like, third place finish. You know, like, I was disciplined, third place, you know, fourth place, you know, whatever. And then, you know, the year that I was like, nah, man, I'm going to blow 80% of my free agency auction budget on Anthony Rizzo. You know, was the year I won. So I think the idea is to hew close to projections and then to use maybe outlier projections for those calculated risks that you're taking. You know, be like, I really like Michael Bush. I'm going to buy him at the 115 WRC plus price. I'm going to buy him at Zips price. I'm going to run the calculator Zips and see what number I get there. And I'm going to spend that on Michael Bush.
I mean, I think a lot of it is just being closer to right on a greater number of the players that the projection sets disagree about.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are going to be the swing. Many of them are going to be the swing players. Some of them are available pretty late, and you find this kind of value after pick 200, especially Junior Caminero, even before this news came down. And you could reasonably anticipate he wasn't going to make the opening day roster. So I don't think there's a radical price drop coming. I think, you know, pick 250, pick 275 was kind of a normal range for him for most of the winter. Okay, so if he drops the pick 300, not that much has changed. You're still shopping in that bin looking for a player that will be extraordinarily valuable, and he could still be that player. This news doesn't actually change a whole lot.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's tricky going the other direction when it's someone like Jackson Merrill, where there was a possibility throughout the spring that he was going to make the opening day roster, but now we're starting to get the announcements, right? He's going to be there in Korea for the opening series and probably will be on the actual opening day roster a week after.
The weird games that managers play with words.
They're trying to be that, right? Clever sometimes, and I think it works against them.
I think it's silly. So Mike Schilt said he's earned a spot on the plane. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yes, that was the way he said it.
Flying to Korea, but you won't give him starting center field yet. That's what he doesn't want to give him that.
Nope, he can fly on the plane, though.
He can fly on the plane. So, I don't know. Reading between the lines, what he said, and then just looking at at what he's been doing, I'm trying not to look at the results. The results are great. I'm trying not to look at the results so much as every time there's an A lineup, he's in center field.
Right.
And that's what I see. So, Jackson Merrill, 38 plate appearances, playing center field almost exclusively since the very beginning. Like, I mean, there was a couple left fields in the beginning of camp, and then since then, center field. And like the component, like the process stats that I like, 8% strikeout rate, 8% whiff rate. Like, that's something I can get with, you know, 55% ground ball rate. I do think, you know, betting on him for power is not a great idea. But I also think that there's a possibility that he's Jung-Hoo Lee-ian.
Oh, at a discounted price for now. That's going to change. Merrill's going to jump in price a lot. We're starting to see it, right?
Would you rather, let's say, you know he's a center fielder, Jung-Hoo Lee or Jackson Merrill?
This year only, probably still Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, closer to his peak.
Because now you're going to close the gap between them in cost. So now you're going to have to assume something closer to even price on Jung-Ho Lee versus Jackson Merrill. I think Jackson Merrill's going to be great long-term. I love that the K rate's nice and low.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's what gives me the Lee comparisons. I also don't know the power's going to be great. I think, you know, possibly the stolen base upside for Merrill is greater than even for Lee. Lee's nickname is the grandson of the wind because his father was super fast and was called the son of the wind or something. Or his grandfather was. I forget exactly the lineage there. But the projection for Jackson Merrill is 8 stolen bases. But, you know, last year had 15 stolen bases and 511. And then how many of those were at the same, had the same rules? Because one of, like, 300 of those plate appearances were A-ball. I don't think they had the same stolen base rules.
It'd be amazing if professional baseball could just use the same rules at every level.
No, they have to test them all out. It's great. So could he do something like 10 homers, 20 stolen bases with like a 280 average? Yes, I think he can do that.
Right. And I think just given how young he is, the power could easily be on the way. It's just going to take a little time for him to unlock it. The only kind of skills flaw this spring, I would say, is probably the ground ball rate being in that 55% range. But he's done that before, too. He's run some higher ground ball rates at a few of his stops. Did show improvement at Double A, though.
Yeah.
You're seeing the rumblings of a very young player with a very high ceiling, putting the pieces all together. And from a projection standpoint, there's a lot of agreement here. This is kind of weird. Like a very narrow range. The range, I think, is 86 from zips to 90 from the bat X. That's a tight range. And the projections are all kind of, air quotes, bad, right? 250s for the average, right around 300, a tick lower for the OBP.
How do you project a defensive value for a prospect?
Especially for a prospect learning a new position.
Yeah, like a shortstop playing center. That's I would say that column is almost irrelevant.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at that. I'm saying I'll take the over on that projection because if they trust him enough to play him, then there's got to be some internal belief that he can top it and what he's done age to level, which is priced in. It's all in some capacity. Projections are accounting for that minor league production, but it seems a tick light to me. Even if I would take Jung-Ho Lee ahead of him.
There's also something that's like a little bit more fantasy-friendly than real-life friendly from those projections. If he's a 90 WRC plus and plays a good center field, the Padres will probably leave him.
Yeah, the threshold, if you're a good defender at a position of need, that is right around there.
They're comparing him to Grisham, who had similar WRC pluses. So.
And you think about how much better he can get facing top-level pitching. Like that's going to have a lot of long-term value as well.
It's funny that we do have a guy with agreement. I just want to throw in the other side, the place that had the lowest standard deviation. And this one's amazing. Alex Verdugo, 106, 106, 106. They know what Alex Verdugo is. Anthony Rendon, second on the boring list. Jake Cronenworth, Josh Young, Edward Julian, Gleyber Torres, Matt McClain, all 107s. See, that's interesting to me.
I want players like that who are not old.
This is a good list. This is a good list of players. You should, I definitely think you should have, I think 2/3 of your roster should be more like this.
Guys that the projection sets with each of their unique approaches still came to all agree numbers. On.
And they're not like 35. You know what I mean? They're all...
If they're old, then it's whatever. It's just because they look at that type of player too similarly.
Yeah. Like Alex Bregman is on this list, and that's fine. I mean, he's okay. But, you know, Jonathan India is also, you know, within 1 point standard deviation. Davis Schneider's projected to be a 110 across the board. That's really interesting. If I'm looking for... See, now if I'm taking chances and I'm taking chances, but all the projection system agree it's a good chance, that's kind of fun too. But I wouldn't rule out Wyatt Langford because the bat has him at 85 or whatever, you know what I mean? 95. Like, There's, no. You know, both sides of these lists are useful. I just, you know, you can get a little bit more from the agreement side and then pepper in some of these more long shots. You can, Tristan Cassis, 109 from the bat, 130 from Steamer.
Jeez. That's a bigger gap than I would have expected for him. I know he's a young player, but we've seen it for basically a full season now in the big leagues.
I wonder if there's a park factor difference there.
Yeah, it could be. Really interesting stuff, though. I do like looking at the differences in the projections, and I think the similarities especially give you some really good core players to target. And again, with the age modifier on there, especially like the under 30 type players that have that agreement across all the systems.
ATC has like a stat for this, right?
Yeah, Ariel made it. Like it's a leaderboard.
Skew.
Yes, it's inter. There's two of them. I'm blanking on which one's which at the moment.
You can look it up. Just look up Ariel Cohen ATC and the word skew, and he'll describe all the different sort of substats that he's created. Because he brings all these projection systems together, he can actually have a stat that's like, you know, the agreement between the projection systems. And so that's kind of a fun thing to track as you're going, is like, you know, mostly agreement. Ooh, this guy's falling and there's a big disagreement. I like that. You know, now I'm going to take a guy at the bottom of this thing, but I could get, you know, one of the better outcomes.
All right, let's hustle through a few news items real quick before we go. Taj Bradley shut down at least 2 weeks with a pec strain.
My aching heart, dude.
It's the kind of injury that he's shut down for two. It's going to take him time to build up. It might be late April, May before he's ready to pitch again, which leaves the door open for a very uninspiring group, at least on the surface, to possibly step in. Mark Topkin had a list of names: Jacob Lopez, Naoki Usawa, who's had a really rough spring, Jacob Wegispack. You remember that name? It's an Al Melchior all-time favorite name. He loves saying Jacob Wegispack. Tyler Alexander and Chris Devensky.
I assume he's saying it right.
I think he is. I think he made sure.
I don't necessarily have, I don't think any numbers on these guys from a stuff perspective. I'm going to check Lopez real quick, but I will just say, just scanning their different minor league stats, Lopez stands out.
Yeah, Lopez was the one that was most interesting to me.
Slider 90, 84 stuff plus, sinker 72. Oh man, stuff plus hates him.
The slider's an 84. I was reading the scouting report, though, the top Rays prospects write-up from Eric Lungenhagen from maybe a year or so ago, and he described Lopez's slider as having plenty of wipe, which I assume is a lot of horizontal movement, and maybe it's just a funky slider for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, I am seeing a 90.9 fastball velocity.
Well, there you go. That could be part of the problem, but really good results. Some big time K rates for him as he moved through the minors.
Yeah.
But had the opposite thing going on at AAA that Michael Bush had, right? K rate came down, walk rate went up. How much of that was ABS? How much of that was something else?
Yeah, good point. And ABS might be, if it is a sweeper, ABS might be a tough one, because sweepers are hard to command. You know, and maybe he can get more called strikes when a guy's framing him. But he is having a hard time with the walks this spring, and hasn't been striking guys out. I think generally what Tampa is doing is what a few other teams like the Rangers are doing, which is can we fake it till the horses come? Because they've got Boz, Bradley, Springs, and Rasmussen all coming back this year. Like, what if Tyler Alexander was just their fifth starter?
They could get by with that. He might be
super
good
boring
enough.
Yeah, maybe they put Lopez and Alexander on the roster, you know, and they just fudge it through that fifth spot until guys are healthy. I think Uwasawa is a little bit more of maybe a long-term play. Like, I think they would rather, you know, put him in the minor leagues and work with him for a while. I don't think he's going to be the answer.
No, I don't think so either. We had a question from Ethan in Discord. What's the outlook on Rasmussen since he had internal brace rather than another Tommy John?
So it's supposed to be a more of a six-month situation.
Right.
And he had it in July last year. So, supposedly he could be throwing by now, but I don't think we have updates like that from him.
No,
we have here. We don't have a. We don't even have a like. He's throwing on flat ground yet.
They put him on the 60-day IL in February, so he's not coming back until June at the earliest, and that even seems pretty aggressive because he's had multiple Tommy Johns before this. It's not.
Yeah, yeah, it's that's a different recovery. It's more complicated for sure. And some of the guys who've come back with the 6 month off the internal brace have been hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd still sort of bake in like 12 months. Like it'll be like maybe it's 8 months and then they, you know, kind of slow walk them back. But it's not like Giolito's going to be back this year. You know, we've learned that he's also having an internal brace and I just don't see him coming back this year.
Nah, timing is huge on that, given that he just had that. But that is the confirmation now. As of yesterday, we didn't know, but is internal brace for Giolito as opposed to a second Tommy John. The thing I would put in just in general out here is coming off of any elbow surgery, other than maybe the first Tommy John, if you're having an updated elbow surgery, I don't think you assume the ceiling's the same when you get back. I think you need to see what's happening when guys are actually throwing again, once you start to get a read on stuff numbers, command especially. You always worry about that coming off of these injuries. So just keep that in mind. I don't expect him to be the same guy right away once he comes back, and either one of Rasmussen or Giolito. It's a story you root for these guys every time because it's a long road back and he's had to do it so many times before.
Yeah. If there's anybody that's more in that like, oh man, I really want to see it before I've really invested in him as Drew Rasmussen just because it's a really tough, long road for him in terms of surgeries, like two surgeries in college, two Tommy Johns in college. Like that's kind of crazy.
And it's brutal.
I want to see him back out there. Luis Gil got on the mound this week. And this is post Tommy John. And he's throwing bullets. He was he struck out a bunch of guys, was throwing 100 and sitting 97, 96, 98. Like, I like that. Like, a little bit difference, like 3 mile an hour difference between sitting and max. I like that. 89 mile an hour gyro slider. So, like, Luis Gil's a guy to remember maybe for next year.
He might get a shot to step in for Cole. Like, there's a possibility. They have a need right now. And just because they traded so much of that depth away, we talked about that, I think, with Will Warren. Like, they a bunch of the up and down guys.
Warren and Heal are like, all gone. And Beater are like, those are the next guys up. Like, they're not like, oh, those are our prospects. They can play their way in. No, that's like the 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
You know, however you order them. I would say that Heal's maybe a little bit ahead of Beater right now. So,
yeah. I mean, Heal's got a little bit of big experience too. He's made 7 career starts. So a little bit of a forgotten guy that could start popping as a nice reserve pick as a result of the uncertainty for now with Garrett Cole. We're still waiting on a further update on his status, but opening day sounds like it's not going to happen. IL stint probably, but we just don't know if it's a long, long-term IL situation.
How far do you drop him in your ranks?
Yeah, how far does he have to fall before I take him? I guess is the other way to think about the question, right? It's like, where do I feel like with uncertainty I could get a good report and be in an okay spot?
I mean, how about Garrett Cole versus Tyler Glasnow?
Glasnow.
Okay, how about Garrett Cole versus Blake Snell?
Ooh, Snell.
Garrett Cole against Justin Steele?
Now we're finding a spot where how much of a discount do I need?
Carl's
about that much? Oh, geez.
Carl's Rodon. Ahead of Carl's Rodon.
I'd take Cole ahead of Rodon for
ahead
now.
Ahead of Justin Verlander?
Maybe. That's probably the line for me.
All right, so he's dropping to around 30.
Because this feels ominous. This feels terrible right now. This is I said it yesterday with Mike. I don't think this is like the Acuña situation. I think this is more of a...
Oh, it's never good when you're going for an MRI.
We're trying to get more reads, more opinions. Just doesn't feel right now with Garrett Cole. So big concern for me at this point. We are going to go. We got another show coming out tomorrow, and we're going to get to some mailbag questions. We got a few other big topics to dig into as well. As I mentioned earlier, you can get a subscription, theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels, $2 a month for the first year. You can find Eno on Twitter @EnoSaris. Find me @Derek Van Riper. Find the pod at Rates and Barrels. That's going to do it for this episode of Rates and Barrels. We're back with you on Thursday.
Thanks for listening.